In the movie Yesterday, Jack, an aspiring but unsuccessful singer-songwriter, lives through an experience where, where the entire world has a power outage that lasts 12 seconds. During the power outage, he gets hit by a bus because all of the lights turn out, all the street lights turn out, and the bus doesn't see him. So while he's knocked out, there are a number of changes that happen due to this mysterious blackout. And one of them, among many, if you see the movie, is that the Beatles did not exist. They had not released any music. They didn't have any hits. They effectively had not existed. And so when Jack awakens, he's the only person that knew of the Beatles. And so he begins to reconstruct the songs that he can remember, and he rehearses them, and he passes them off as his own. As his fame continues to grow, he begins to struggle inside. Struggle because all of his relationships with the people that he loves are changing as he grows more famous. But more importantly, he feels guilty about passing off someone else's work as his own. And so finally, Jack debuts his album in a concert not far away from where he grew up in England. And after the show is over, two people come in to see him, a Russian man and a British woman. And they apparently are the only other two people who lived through that 12 seconds and can remember who the Beatles were. As he speaks with them, he thinks they're going to be upset, but he's rather startled by their response when they say that this art that was for them a thing of beauty and gave them hope and comfort, which seemed lost forever, they were thankful that he had been able to save and give back to the world. And when he still feels guilty about what he's done, they tell him that he needs to make a trip to go see somebody very special. And this is that clip there.
Did a job I enjoyed day after day. Sailed the world. Fought for things I believed in. And won. A couple of times. Found the woman I loved. Fought hard to keep her too. Lived my life with her.
Fought hard for her.
overcomplicate. Sorry, what's your name?
Jack.
Overcomplications, young Jack. Loss and gain. Prejudice and pride. What? It all turned out just... fab. How's your love life?
Bad. I let her slip away.
Try to get her back. You want a good life? It's not complicated. Tell the girl you love that you love her. And tell the truth to everyone whenever you can.
Can I give you a hug?
What?
So good to see you. How old are you?
78.
Fantastic! You made it to 78.
You're a very strange man. But go ahead. You need serious psychiatric help.
Not anymore.
I share that clip with you today because the scriptures from 2 Timothy, they're written at the end of John's life, Paul's life, not John Lennon, the Apostle Paul. John Paul, Ringo, George. So this letter was written at the very end of Paul's life. He's in prison in Rome. And he knows that he is not going to last much longer. And so today, what I wanted to talk to you about as we've been studying Paul's life and thinking about what we can learn from it to build a resilient faith of our own, is to talk a little bit today about coping. We need to be able to cope with life's battles, to be able to maintain faith, and to be able to sustain it. Now, I want to make something clear. Above and beyond all things, what sustained Paul was the belief in the bodily resurrection of Jesus Christ. You and I have been, most of us here have been educated. We've been educated with the understanding that the scientific method is kind of the basis for how we study our world. So that means that you observe something in the world, and then you try and draw some conclusions from it, and then you might test those conclusions, and out of those conclusions you might develop some theories, and hopefully some of those theories can lead to discoveries and facts. So we observe what's real and what's true. That's how we learn. That's how we have been brought up. Many centuries ago, maybe not as far back as we would like to think, this was not the case. What was the basis for many when it came to education, where they were educated through the lens of faith. And I'm not just talking about Christianity, Judaism, Islam. There are still some places in the world, Buddhism, Hinduism. There are still places in the world and some places here in the United States where that's still true, where what's fundamentally true, what you start with first, are kind of a basic understanding of what that faith says about you and about the world. And so Paul would have come out of that understanding. He was also educated in a Greek manner, which is kind of will become the basis of how you and I, you know, the aristocratic Aristotelian method, being able to, or excuse me, Socratic method, where we're supposed to question what's given to us. Someone gives us information, and we're supposed to question that so that we can understand it. But in Paul's world, it doesn't work that way. Someone who's older and wiser gives you the basic knowledge and understanding of all things. And that's what you build your life on. And so Paul had been educated in one style. But for him, the fruition, the end point, the completion of his own education, not just his understanding of faith, but his understanding of the world, is that Jesus is the King of all creation. It's called Christus Victor. Jesus is the King of all creation. Jesus is the King of all people. Jesus is the King of all is King of the forests and the cities and the oceans and the skies and the universe. Jesus is the King of everything. And what that means is that ultimately what Jesus wants, Jesus gets. That's how it works. It may take a long and winding road to get there. It may be a long and winding road to get there, but if you read particularly the book of, you know, John's Revelation, that's supposed to be for every group of faithful people in every period of history. That is a book of hope. That no matter what you are experiencing in that time, in that place, even if you think the world is headed in the wrong direction, even if your life you feel like is kind of headed in the wrong direction, you can trust that when you put your faith in Jesus Christ, that ultimately His will and His mission and His ministry will be the only things that last and the only things that matter. Loving God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and loving our neighbor as ourselves. And so this sustains not just Paul, but it sustains the early disciples. I know this is debated among scholars this day. When I was in seminary, I heard all kinds of theories about the resurrection. I heard a theory that what the disciples meant was that Jesus was resurrected morally, that his teachings continued, that they were true despite the fact that he had been crucified on the cross. I heard an explanation that Jesus wasn't actually dead when they brought him off of the cross, and that he was able to somehow, since they didn't break his legs to kill him, he was able to walk out of the tomb on his own. I've heard all kinds of explanations that are able or try to reconcile our scientific view of the world with this moment in time that you and I can only take on faith. But I just want to tell you that in the early church, it is Jesus' resurrection. It is Him conquering death. That is the proof that the disciples have, and those who saw Him after He resurrected and until He ascended into heaven, and even after, when Paul has his vision on the way to Damascus, it is Jesus coming back to life that sustains and nurtures and carries forward the faith, so that by putting our faith in Him, nothing that we do in His name and in His Spirit is wasted effort or wasted time. After Paul meets Jesus, he doesn't regret a moment that he has spent in His service. It is what sustains him every single day. He has shared the gospel of the only thing that matters. The only thing that will make a difference in terms of The nature of people's future and the nature of the future of this world. He knows it at the core of who He is. And it sustains Him. I hope that your faith in Jesus sustains you in the same way. If you're like me, every day you wake up, you read the newspaper, you watch television, you listen to the radio, you look on your stupid black mirror, and it's like more bad news. It's just like the world is headed in the wrong direction in so many different ways, and there's fighting, and there's arguing, and there's war, and there's division, and sometimes you just wonder, it's like, where is this world headed? And I want you to know, it's always been that way. Could you imagine living through the Civil War? World War II. Some of you can imagine living through World War II. A few are still left. Could you imagine living through the Hundred Years' War in Europe? Could you have imagined living through colonialism in Central and South America or Africa or parts of Asia? Could you imagine living through the Black Plague? Could you imagine living through the final destruction of the Roman Empire? Can you imagine living through the change from serfdom to the Industrial Revolution and the surge of population from the countryside into the cities? It seems like the world has always been changing and undulating. And it's scary. And you wonder where God is in the midst of it. And I pray that you take this lesson. As I get older, it hits harder every day. Jesus, His mission, His ministry, what He seeks to accomplish through each one of us and in us, to bring that peace that passes understanding through sacrificial love. This is it. This is what matters. And on top of that, to fortify that, Paul had a couple other things that helped him cope. Helped him cope with the troubles of life. First, we talk about his friendships. Of course, Paul in 2 Timothy, he talks about Jesus and he talks about knowing that he'll be vindicated and that everybody who believes will be vindicated when it's all said and done. He hammers that home in this, but he also talks about the importance of relationships. He talks about having been failed. He talks about people having walked away, but he doesn't let that shape who he is and how he sees other people. Or to be bruised to the point where he no longer trusts people or wants to be around them. One of the men that Paul asked for is a guy by the name of Mark. Did you see that? Send Mark to me because he's helpful to me. Mark is often referred to as John Mark in the epistles. He can go either way. Mark or John Mark. It's the same person. Paul will refer to him both ways. We're not sure why. Maybe John Mark is the proper name and Mark is the nickname. We don't really know for sure, but early on in his ministry, Paul got very upset with John Mark. Very upset. To the place where he sent him away. They were together, and he was so upset with the job that he was doing, sharing the gospel, that he sent him away on his own. Go with this person, go with whoever. I don't want you to be with me anymore. And there are little hints throughout the epistles that this, whatever it is, this difference that exists between Paul and Mark, that this difference is, it continues. Whenever Paul refers to him time and time again, it's done so in a, if not derogatory fashion, with a tone of disappointment. And yet here we are. Paul is at the end of the road. He's been abandoned by one person who's given up to the world. Probably means he took a job. He sent other people who have helped him along the way. He sent them out to spread the gospel and to continue the work. And who does he ask for to come and sit with him? It's Mark. It's Mark. Because that relationship was started good and then maybe it turned sour a little bit. As Paul got older, his attitude towards Mark began to change. Can't you hear that in this letter written by this old man who is tired? He knows he's nearing death. He knows that his life is just about poured out like a drink offering, just like a chalice filled with wine. He's been poured out. And to all those who have failed him, to all those who have made him upset, he makes it a point to say, I don't hold that against any of you. And I know that you didn't know what you were doing, and I forgive you. And by the way, I really like that Mark guy. Can you send him? Relationships. We need to lean on one another. We need one another. First service, you know, we heard Ruth Ann Lohr. Ruth Ann is a beloved member of the First Service. Everybody has a great Ruth Ann Lohr story. My story is that when I was here, you know, I served here from 1991 to 1997. I started while I was still in college, and I left when I was ordained probationary elder in the United Methodist Church. Went through seminary, the whole deal. I was a youth director. And for those that have heard the stories of that day, of me being a youth director, about 50% of them are true. Even I couldn't live up to the other 50%. But we were... my wife at the time and I, we were living next door. We used to own a house, the old Hover house that was next door. We tore it down about, I don't know, 15 years ago, I suppose, because it was just in such disrepair. It sat empty for over 20 years when Goldina was in, Goldina Hover, when she was in a nursing home. And then the church bought it after she passed away and they settled the estate and nothing had been really done to it. And so it had this old refrigerator in it that was round. You know what I'm talking about? Remember the round refrigerators that you would open with there was a pedal on the bottom, and there was a great big lever that opened. You know, you had to open that lever. And the young people are looking at me like I'm crazy. Look it up on the Google, kids. We had one of those, and we didn't have much money in those days. And I was in seminary, and she was finishing up her undergrad at Miami, so she lived in Oxford. Well, I lived in Delaware from Monday through Thursday, and then we would see one another Thursday night. So did the shopping at the beginning of the week, came back Thursday, and the refrigerator had died. The refrigerator had died, and all the food in it was spoiled. And Amy was sitting out on the front stoop of the house, and she was crying. And it just so happened that at that moment, the person who was on the board of trustees, who was responsible for that house, happened to pull up in her car. And that person was Ruth Ann Lohr. And Ruth Ann went up. She was just checking on us to see if everything was okay. Amy shared the story. She showed her the spoiled food. Ruth Ann came in, helped clean out the refrigerator, then came over here and found Dr. Bishman, who was a senior pastor at the time. Now, I don't want to say Dr. Bishman was cheap, but looking at the former chair of the Board of Trustees, he was pretty cheap, wasn't he, Nancy? He was pretty tight with a dollar. And Ruth Ann just came into his office And in her own Ruth Ann way, she just quietly looked at him and said, "We're buying a new refrigerator for the parsonage next door at Bindle's today. The church is, I'll buy it. The church will reimburse me. And then I'm going to take them out to do some grocery shopping to replace what was lost." And it happened. And I kind of wondered, Joseph was kind of notorious for if you did something that he didn't like, next time you saw him, you could be in trouble. Maybe that was just me. But that was like a Friday. I didn't see him Friday. I didn't see him Saturday. Sunday morning, showed up. There he is. I see him. He sees me. He calls me over. He looks at me. I think, oh, man, I'm dead. And this is all he said. What Ruth Ann Lohr wants, Ruth Ann Lohr gets. We need one another. That's part of the base of the faith. That's why Paul chose to plant churches. That's why Paul chose to create this community. He devoted his life to it. Because we need one another. In order to cope with life, the highs and the lows, we need each other. And we know that we're going to fail one another. It's just going to happen. Because we don't know what we're doing. We're figuring it out as we go along, but still we don't give up on one another. We still love one another. We still support one another. We still forgive one another. Because in the end, we want to be sustained not just through our faith and not just through the relationships that we build, but the legacy we know we're leaving. Ruth Ann Lohr may not be a giant out in the world, but in this church, what Ruth Ann wants, Ruth Ann gets. Because when somebody needed someone to pray for them or talk about some sort of difficult time that they went through in their life, she always has made herself available. Whether it was a card or a conversation or a visit, you want to be remembered that way. You want to be remembered as somebody who left it all out on the field. You know, the Buckeyes every week. I don't care if the Buckeyes win or lose. That's not really true. I do care if they lose. But I'll be really upset if they lose because they didn't give their best effort. I'll be upset at the end of my life if I didn't feel at the end of it, even in all my imperfections, that I didn't give my best effort. I know how I want people to remember me. Some people will love me. Some people will not. Some people will love you. Some people will not. But make the reason why people don't love you, make those reasons they don't love you the right reasons. Because sometimes sacrificial love isn't always popular. It's not always easy. And so I just leave you with this word. It's pretty simple. I just pray that your faith sustains you. That through the ups and downs of life, the thing that keeps you going is this growing knowledge that Jesus is the King of all creation. And that He will come again someday, and all that the only things that will survive and the only things that will matter will be that which He believed in. Love, grace, peace, joy, righteousness, justice. These things will win the day. I pray that that understanding grows in you every day as your relationship in Him grows. And I pray that as that happens, but you have good people that you can lean on. And even more importantly, that you leave a legacy of being a good person others could lean on. This is what will sustain you all the days of your life until you have no days left and you enter into the great mystery of faith. Of what we believe will be.